perfect. Hi, hello again, friends, and welcome into another edition of Racing Refresh Happy Hour. This one, episode 22, titled RFK Renaissance. That's right, it's Wednesday, you know what it means. It's time for another just off-the-wall fun hour of talking NASCAR, talking a little Formula One, talking a little IndyCar, and looking at the best coiffed hair I've ever seen on a podcast. So let's do it. Let's bring him in. The best man himself, of course, again, that coiffed hair is what it's all about. Colin Best, come on in here.
Yeah, I just fixed my hair up today because it's been really kind of sweaty and everything. But I'm glad to be here. It was a fantastic weekend of racing. If you saw it on TV, Formula One, it's okay. Richmond, all right. Didn't have a bad weekend, but we have a lot of racing to get to this weekend. So let's just start the show. But we do have a special guest, Logan. What they got.
We have a man, a myth, a legend. Look, there is no one that played Jeopardy better in any history of this show than the man himself. I'm talking about Matt Nicholson, of course. Matt, come on in here. How are you, Matt? It's good to see you. Welcome back. You've been on several incarnations of the show. How the hell are you?
I'm doing absolutely outstanding, gentlemen. How are yourselves?
Well, anytime we get to see you, handsome, it's life is good. You know, you got that Alabama down south charm, you know, so it's just good to see you.
If that's what you want to call it.
Yep. Co-host of the Championship Racing Network, Matt Nicholson, you're going to sit with us the next hour and we're going to break down all the action. We're also going to talk about your experience in Mid-Ohio because you did some what we call spotting. Heard you were soggy like an open-faced sandwich, my friend.
I think that's an understatement.
All right, brother. And of course, the brains behind the operation, and she's much better looking than all of us. I can say that pretty accurately. Let's bring her in for just a hot second to say hello, producer Peggy. Come on in here. How are you, beautiful? Looking good. Yeah, that's her face when Ryan Blaney doesn't win. Hey, well, that's her face when he does win.
He didn't win.
He wasn't even close to winning.
No.
Hey-o.
But another race comes again on Sunday.
Well, yeah, that's true. You know what? I think I did say Renaissance. It's RFK Resurgence. What the hell am I talking about? I don't know. It happens. Aaron says, you guys might be doing a show, but I'm the only guy to have attended a NASCAR, IndyCar, Robbie Gordon Supertrack, and NHRA event with Matt Nicholson. One of these days, me and Matt, we're going to hug hard. It's going to happen. Looking forward to it.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong at all.
Yeah, and there's like hanging out with AJ. There's nothing quite like him. Isn't that right, Matt? He's a character.
Definitely.
He's a character.
No doubt about it.
So he's an absolute character. Speaking of characters, though, we got to get into it because there's a lot to break down. Let's go ahead and do our weekend review. Oh, yeah, look at that. That's graphic extraordinaire. Peggy Lore looking good as always. All right. I know what the script says, but we're just going to do it a little Loganity style. Let's talk about the Cup Series at Richmond. Chris Buescher got it done. The reason this is called RFK, Resurgence, Renaissance, Renegade, whatever you want to call it. We love you too, Big England. Hope you're well, brother, out there in the last I saw, he was taking laps in a golf cart at Sonoma. So hope you're well out there in the turns of chaos. All right, but let's talk Richmond. So the reason this thing's called RFK comeback essentially is Chris Buescher got it done at Richmond, the action track or lack thereof this week. You're a guest, Mr. Nicholson. We're going to start with you because we have, I don't know about Southern hospitality, but we do it all right up here in the Midwest. So let's start with you. Chris Buescher got it done. What were your overall thoughts first on Richmond? You know, they call it the action track. Didn't have a ton of action as far as the cautions go. It turned into a strategy race, sort of like an old school Pocono. What was your thoughts overall on Richmond?
It really did turn into a strategy race, in my opinion. I do agree with you on that one. But more, it's really here of late, especially with the Gen 7 car, it's been more of the in-action track because it's pretty much if you can get out in front in clean air, you're king of the hill or however you want to word that. And Chris Buescher and Scott Graves and that team, they got it. They put themselves out front, and next thing you know, there's the winner. Now, I didn't expect him to win first out of RFK. I was expecting Brad to win one before Buescher did. But he proved me wrong, and now he's solidified himself officially in the playoffs. And, guys, I'm going to say he may be a sleeper, in my opinion.
Sleeper indeed. Mr. Best, what were your overall thoughts on Richmond and Chris Buescher getting it done? And then I got a couple of key questions for both of you.
See, I thought it was a very exciting race towards the end where you had multiple different drivers playing up multiple different strategies. I'll say my big loser for the weekend has to be Martin Truex Jr. because he got off cycle compared to everyone else and just never caught back up. But I thoroughly enjoyed the Cookout 400. Cookout, please sponsor us. That'd be really great. But Chris Buescher has been turning into the sort of this short track king as of late. He's won at Bristol last year. He won at Richmond this year. And honestly, he has run pretty well at Martinsville in Richmond earlier this year. So it's really no surprise that Chris Buescher actually did win this race. And he has been getting more solid finishes as the entire RFK bunch has really sort of come on as of late in the summer stretch of this NASCAR season. And I do think that RFK could make, this is my bold prediction, I think Chris Buescher makes it to the round of eight. I think he gets a very deep playoff run. And you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he made the championship four as well. So, honestly, there was a couple guys in the top five that you thought – actually in the top ten that you think could have won this race. You had Ryan Preece finish in the top ten. You had Bubba Wallace almost finished inside the top ten. There's a lot of interesting things going on over the course of 400 laps. And I like to see the strategy more so. You get it in Formula One. You get it in IndyCar. You don't really see it that much when it comes to the Cup Series. But when it does come to the Cup Series, it's a really fun show.
Look, I don't disagree with either one of you gentlemen. Let's cut to the chase, shall we? Who's the guy, CSI? And so let's ask it. Does this make RFK not only the number two four team, but are they the number one four team right now? Team Penske's kind of struggled. SHR did have a great day on Sunday. All four or the cars in the top 11, but overall, it's been a season to forget thus far for SHR. Colin, I'm going to start with you.
I assume he wanted to. There you go. Logan, you cut
out. Where does RFK? Well, you know, hey, technology, right? Where does RFK rank in the Ford totem pole to you? Are they one right now? Are they two right now? You tell me, Colin.
I'm going to give you the non-politician answer. I'm going to give you their tied for first. And to be honest with you, I think Ryan Blaney has done a good enough job this year. He's run somewhat what we expect him to do, top 10, top 15, maybe each and every single week. Austin Cindric has somewhat have been a disappointment so far. And Joey Logano has been pretty much the carrying this, if this was a baton race in track and field, he would be the anchor guy. In the Ford camp, who's second, it has to be RFK. I really, because both of these guys have come in each and every single week. And, you know, early in the season, they may not have gotten the finishes that they've wanted, but as of late, probably the past five or six races, you know, we've seen both of these drivers finish inside the top 15 almost every single week. Some of them have, Chris Buescher and Brad Keselowski, have led laps. They were strong at Atlanta. They're also strong here. So I would say they're tied for first in the Ford camp.
All right, I do have a couple comments from Ryan Hill I want to get to. He of course, shouts me out. Appreciate you, Ryan. Love you, buddy. And then he said Michael McDowell was the big loser. MTJ got the strategy to work, and it got him a solid finish. McDowell, he said, missed big with that strategy is what he's going for. And then he says Team Penske is number one. All right, Matt, I want you to answer to Ryan and me. Where do you rank RFK right now on the Ford totem pole? Because Ford's been down as a whole. SHR is having a season to forget thus far. Penske's been okay, but okay is just it. Where do you rank our RFK?
I'm in agreement with Colin, but I'm gonna say it's more of a 1A, 1B situation right now. And it could really go either way. Penske could be 1B, RFK could be 1B. But that's how I look at it right there, because as you said, Penske has kind of fallen a little bit by the wayside, yet RFK has picked it up a little bit. In a way, if you want to even go as far as two, I would say Front Row and SHR is a 2A, 2B scenario as well. But I'm in agreement with Colin. It's more of a 1A, 1B the way I look at it. It could really go either way, because RFK has picked it up when they needed to, and Penske has kind of just planed off and leveled off without going up or really down. They've kind of planed off.
Yeah, it's interesting. The only Ford team that I can truly say is on the upswing right now is RFK. Think about it. We're living in a world right now where we would be – I mean, we're not going to be shocked if Joey Logano or Ryan Blaney win, but right now we're expecting Brad Kay to get a win. We are expecting Brad Kay to break through. You just talked about it shortly, Matt. You said you thought he'd be the first one to get RFK back in victory lane. Look, right now I think – I don't know if they're better overall, but without question, the hottest Ford team is RFK. I know it's a bit of a hot take. Ryan says Penske has two wins to RFK's one. And Penske guys, Logano and Blaney, are ahead of Brad Kay and Buescher in points. Overall standings, you're right, but momentum is a fickle, you know what, my friend. And right now the momentum is on RFK, in my opinion, and Penske is in – it's weird to say they're in a slump when they just won the championship last season, but even last year wasn't a great season until Joey Logano, does his thing. So I think it's a closer race for number one than people think, and I definitely think they're ahead of RFK or SHR. Pardon me, I really do, and because SHR's in the doldrums again. Great day this past week at Richmond, no doubt about it. But they're missing something on the super speedways and road courses. So that's just my take. All right, now let's continue to talk about Richmond. Ryan and AJ and anybody else, please continue to leave your comments. We'll get to them as we can. Say something so we can tell you how right or wrong you are. We appreciate that so much. All right, so let's continue to talk about Richmond. I want to know, one of the more debatable topics these days is what track should get one date or two dates. You know, we saw Pocono down to one date, and obviously that worked out. I mean, it was like gangbusters. They were throwing babies in the air at Pocono. All right. You'd have thought Taylor Swift had come through town the way they were selling that joint. So I want to know, do you think, given what we have with the short package right now, in my opinion, the short package for NASCAR needs some serious work, and to their credit, they're working on it. They had testing Monday and Tuesday, but given where we're at, the short track package right now, pardon me, is Richmond, in your view, a one track or two track date in 2024? Matt, I'll start with you.
Richmond's one, and I'll tell you why. Look at what happened with Pocono going down to one date. It created more intensity. It created a bigger crowd. And it created a better overall atmosphere, in my opinion. from even the on track to even outside of the track. The best way I would say it creates, it gives a sense of urgency to that facility and to the series, I would say, to make the product better. Because backing up to Pocono, that's one of the better Pocono races I've seen in quite a while recently. So, and based off of some of the chatter that I did over here in Ohio, that may be coming to fruition.
Ryan, going back to our Penske discussion, Logano was right there in fourth Sunday. He had a great run going to Pocono until the accident. Blaney was right there at Pocono until his car broke on him. Penske's been faster lately. There has been improvement. I'm not trying to run down the captain. I'm really not. But right now, we just got to talk about how RFK's leaps and bounds. I mean, we are. Would you be stunned if Brad Kay went on Sunday? I wouldn't be surprised about it. He's pretty darn good there, home track. Colin, let's go back to Richmond. One date or two dates, 2024 and going forward. What say you?
See, I got to disagree with Matt. I believe it has two dates. And let me
tell
you
why. That's why we like it right there. Come on, have a fight, boys.
We want more short tracks. For years, NASCAR is, you know, in the early 2000s, we went to mile and a half. And that's where we went. We forgot the short tracks. We forgot North Wilkesboro. If you look from late models, Bandoleros, that's the beginning to the Cup Series. What ties them all together? That's short tracks. And yeah, the short track hat package can be fixed. That's a car issue. I don't think Richmond's a bad track. I don't think Martinsville or Bristol, hell, even North Wilkesboro is a bad track. We just have a bad car right now. And if it was fixed, we could have great short track races. And we always need more. If you're going to give Richmond second date away, where are you going to go to? Most people are going to say the mile and a half. Probably people would say a road course. To me, if you're going to take Richmond's date away, you got to give it to another short track. And if you're going to give it to any short track in the country, NASCAR should probably say, hey, let's start going to the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway, where NASCAR should have remained and should have never left that place in the first place. So for me, I say Richmond keeps two dates. I mean, the testing yesterday with removing the diffuser out from the bottom of the car, drivers seemed to think that actually that showed improvement in the short track package. And you know, if we try it under race conditions, if we come back next year, we have no rear diffuser and we say the race was great, and then people are going to claim up and say, why did we take a date away from Richmond? It was a fantastic race. It deserves more. So I feel like don't try to rob Peter to get back at Paul, if you know what I'm saying.
Don't try to rob Peter to get back at Paul. Ryan says he wants Richmond to have two dates still, but he thinks all the short tracks need to be run under the lights at night. I agree. We should have a few more night races. I know TV ratings play a big, big hand in that and what the TV partners want, but we should have one Richmond night race in my view. Matt, do you have any rebuttal to what Colin said there? I know that he disagreed with you, and I'm hoping to stir up some controversy.
I respect what he said. I mean, Richmond could get away with two dates, but until they get this car fixed, and I am in full, total, complete agreement with him, it's a car problem, which is therefore making the track look absolutely terrible. I mean, go back to even the Gen 4 car. Texas was good. You change the car and mix the car up, Texas go, pfft. Kentucky went, so, I mean, it's a car problem, and they got to fix the car to where it doesn't make the tracks look bad. But, heck, you're going to throw the fairgrounds out there, take them to Five Flags. They'd probably put on a phenomenal race at Five Flags.
Thank you.
I love that racetrack.
Oh, I do too. It's my hometown track.
I love Five Flags. Put them at Five Flags. But if they're going to keep them two dates, one day and one night, here's why I say that. Look at how much on-track action. You take away the leader getting a country mile ahead at points during the truck race. Look at how much action was from second all the way back to 30th. There was some solid action at a night race. Put one under the lights, one in the daytime, go from there.
I agree with that 100%. All right, let's move it along. Xfinity Series, they were at Road America. You know, we had a date at Road America in the Cup Series. That is no more, at least for now. Sam Mayer got his first win for Junior Motorsports. Big win for that young man. Selfishly, I was kind of rooting for Parker Kligerman there at the end because I thought it'd be a nice underdog story. Parker's a likable guy in my view. But Sam Merritt gets it done. Of course, there were some scary moments at Road America. Chandler Smith comes to mind. Glad he had the wherewithal to slow it down and break it the hard way, if you will. So glad he's okay. Thoughts on Sam Merritt getting the win, and is this the first of many, or is this just he snuck up and got one? Matt, I'll start with you on that one.
I think it was just a matter of time before Sam got that first one because he's been so close at several other tracks, and his background is heavy in road course racing. But like I said, it was just a matter of time, and I think this is the first of, I'm not going to say many, but the first of several that are coming because, as the saying in racing goes, the hardest one to get is always that first one. The next one comes so much easier. I think it's the first of many for Sam. I mean, because several times I've been able to talk to Sam and, you know, hang out with him. He's a good guy. Good guy to talk to. Easy to get along with. It was just a matter of time. And I think this is the first of many for him, or several, however you want to call it.
Colin, what say you? Sam Merritt breaks through. Is this the first of many? Is this several? Is this the one-off? Did he get lucky? What say you? What's the ceiling for Sam Merritt?
This isn't a one-off. He did everything he had to do at Road America, especially in the final, pretty much that lap coming before the white flag where just all hell broke loose at Road America. And it seemed like, you know, Parker Kligerman was the guy who was going to get to Sam Merritt and possibly pass him for the lead, but that did not happen. And to be honest with you, I think this is the first of many. I think Sam Merritt has had potential. I mean, this guy, and maybe Matt can correct me if I'm wrong, but this guy is a former ARCA West champion. Like he knows how to get things done. He's an ARCA East champion. He's been a competitor in that series and done really well. He's worked his way through. And if anyone knows anything about race car talent, it would probably be Dale Jr. And Dale Jr. knows that Sam Merritt has all the tools and talents necessary to be successful in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. But the thing is, when he starts winning more often, then the talk will be, hey, let's move him up to Cup. Let's get him let's start working on his future. But until he does that on a more regular basis, like a Ty Gibbs basis, he'll be an Xfinity Series regular. But I don't think that's going to be too far from now.
But I would say, you know, tagging on to that, I would say the big what if story is, what if Sage Karam doesn't make the mental mistake and run off track?
Yeah.
That saves Karam's race, in my opinion, if he doesn't make that mistake. But yeah, to each his own.
I agree with you. You know, it heartbreaking for Sage, really. I mean, because you could feel the dejection came through the television to me. It just came through. And no, heartbreaking for sure. But good for Sam. Good for Junior Motorsports. They're going through an interesting year. Brandon Jones doesn't look like he's going to make the playoffs unless he sneaks in a win. They're going through some interesting times at Junior Motorsports. Of course, you know, I shouldn't be surprised. Dale Jr. is always interesting, right? But I thought it was a good race at Road America. What do you gentlemen want to see Road America back on the Cup schedule? Yay or nay, Colin?
Oh, absolutely. I think it is probably one of the best road courses in the country compared to the Belgian Grand Prix, which we'll talk about later, as Spa being one of the best racetracks in the world. Road America is right up there with being on par with, you know, Spa and Silverstone and all the other great road courses in the world. To me, it's a difficult racetrack, which makes fans like us enjoy the racing. I mean, it's a 4-mile long racetrack. There's a lot of opportunities to make mistakes. And if you hit it right, like the last two laps of Road America, it can be some of the most exciting two laps on the schedule in 2023. So I'm all for the Cup Series going back to Road America.
What say you, Matt? Yay or nay?
I concur with him 1,000,000%. Road America deserves to be back on a Cup Series schedule.
All right. Well, I agree with both you gentlemen. I thought it was a solid, solid race, some of the best race of the weekend. Now let's talk finally about the Truck Series. Carson Hocevar kind of has his breakout win, if you will. He's been under some scrutiny. He's got personality, and, you know, Dale Jr.'s had some talks with him. He's been under some scrutiny. He breaks through. Carson Hocevar's got a big, bright future. What'd you think of this one, Matt? I'll come to you. You are essentially the expert for the evening on the Truck Series. What'd you think? Carson Hocevar gets it done.
Personally, after Richmond, I think the championship favorite has established himself, because that was for him to drive back as far as it, from him to start at the back with a flat tire at the start of the race, drive to the front, fall back again on pit strategy, and drive to the front again and pass the fastest truck on the property in Tom Majeski. I think your championship favorite has established himself, and the Nice 42 truck, I would be crazy to not bet against him. I would bet for him and bet with him on whatever the line may be to be the serious favorite over Corey Heim.
What say you, Colin? Is Carson Hocevar the favorite?
No, I still think if you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. And still, Zane Smith is still your reigning Cups Truck Series champion, and you have to still go through him. But if you look at this Truck Series so far in 2023, it's shaping up to be a very exciting playoff battle where you have Corey Heim, who, you know, he has two wins in a season. Zane Smith has two. Carson Hocevar has three. I mean, all the top five guys in the playoff standings in the Truck Series are multiple-time winners in the Truck Series so far this year. And the only one outside of that who has a win is Ben Rhodes, and he's down towards the cut line. So the next eight races for the Truck Series could be very interesting to how they play out. Carson Hocevar has to do a lot, and he's still a young driver. Let's not forget, pretty much halfway through the season, he did a complete 180 mentally, and he's become the driver we've seen today. But is that enough for him to become a Truck Series champion? We'll just got to wait to find out.
Yeah, Carson Hocevar's future very up in the air as far as will he be a Truck Series champion? Will he be in Xfinity next year? Could he be in Cup next year? Who knows? There's a lot of questions about Carson Hocevar, and we will answer them as best we can. But we shall see. And then finally, look, Colin, Formula One, stop me if you've heard it before. Max Verstappen won again. Look, I know I love Richard Petty. Like, that's my guy, and I try to throw in at least 43 references a week for obvious reasons. But I feel like if I'd actually watched Richard, I wouldn't like him quite as well, because this is a tough watch right now. One of the ones a tough watch. What do you say? What do you say, Colin? Max Verstappen gets it done again.
I mean, Lewis Hamilton alluded to it. Yeah, the racing would be much more exciting if it was closer, but you know, for the first time in a long time, Max Verstappen actually had to work for something. You know, he had a gearbox change that gave him a five-place grid penalty at the start. Charles Leclerc won the pole.
I feel like they did that for fun.
Yeah, he did. He did win the sprint shootout on Saturday, but it was dry conditions on Sunday. He did start six. He made his way up to fourth by lap one, and by lap 15, he passed Sergio Perez, and he never looked back to win over 22 seconds over Sergio Perez and then 32 seconds over Charles Leclerc. If this keeps going just like this, I had to crunch the numbers. I had to do some math, which I'm a journalist. I never do math. But if Max Verstappen still continues his winning ways, he will take the championship by the Qatar Grand Prix, which is going to be October 7th and 8th weekend. But if he wins the next couple sprint races, which the next one is at the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, he will clinch the championship during the sprint weekend at Qatar, which means he would be the first champion to ever be crowned in Formula One history on a day other than Sunday, which would be a Saturday. It'd be his third F1 championship if he did it. And there would also be five races left to go, as you would still – the F1 season ends late in November. So for Max Verstappen, this is his world, and we're all living in it in Formula One. And I'll be honest, if he wins probably another championship, there's a possibility we may not see him in Formula One in 2024. He may go do other ventures, because what else can you do after winning three straight Formula One world championships?
Well, you can try to win five straight like a certain NASCAR Hall of Famer, but neither here nor there. We'll talk about that real soon. All right, now it's time. Peter, cue it up. Let's go. It's time for Happy Hour Headlines. All right, there is a lot of news to touch on and get to. So we're gonna do this, and we'll do it as always, kind of my style, since the showrunner's in Italy. Italy. So he can enjoy his pizza, and I'm going to do it a little Logandy style. All right. Did you guys see Jordan Bianchi updated silly season for us via The Athletic? A lot of news in that piece. If you guys haven't seen that article, go check it out. It's well worth the whatever it is for the paywall. They run fantastic deals anyway. You pay like $2 a month for like a year or something. You'll be pay it. It's fine. It's a McDouble. It's lovely, lovely coverage. Let's break down some of that first. I'm going to paraphrase the article because I don't want to rip off from Mr. Bianchi or The Athletic. It made it sound, I'm paraphrasing here, but it sounds like Martin Truex is 50-50 on coming back if that reporting is accurate. So I want a prediction from both you gentlemen. I'm going to start with you, Colin. Will MTJ be in the 19 in 2024? Yay or nay?
Nay. I think Martin Truex Jr. has done pretty much everything he can possibly do in the NASCAR Cup Series at this point. I mean, he hasn't had Jimmy Johnson numbers, but he is a Cup Series champion. He is an Xfinity Series champion. He's done a lot for the sport. He's done a lot with very little. He started at DEI, left. He went to Furniture Row Racing. They weren't good when he came. They were still reeling off the Kurt Busch, but Kurt Busch brought him up to where Furniture Row was at the end. Took them to the promised land, won them a championship, and now he's with Joe Gibbs Racing, which is probably the best ride he's ever been in his career. I mean, we've seen drivers come and go. He recently bought a boat, or he's recently having a decision to buy a boat. And if Martin Truex Jr., I don't know him personally, but things I've read about him, he loves fishing, he loves being on the outdoors, and if you buy a boat, you intend to use it. So if he does, he won't be in the 19 car for next year.
Well, you know, I'm sure he could buy a boat and figure out a way to use it other times. I don't, you know, that's just a hobby. You know, luckily, like Chris Jansen's son about a few years ago, you know, being a Cup driver can buy you a boat and they can buy you a truck to pull it. So with that, Ryan says he thinks MTJ will be back. Matt, I want your take. MTJ. You know, we have no inside information, but what's your take? Does he come on back for one more year or at least one more year? He's kind of becoming the Brett Favre, Mark Martin of this era. does he come back for at least one more year, or do you think he rides off into the sunset? What say you?
I told someone the other day that I could see this being a Nico Rosberg-style situation. He's competitive his final year. He wins the championship and leaves Phoenix with deuces in the air and says, I'm out. I don't think he's back because all the verbiage he's used and the subliminal messaging, what I could say, that he's used and said towards reporters when they've asked questions, I think he's done. I think he's about ready to hang it up.
You know, I don't know. I'm 50-50. I could see either one. Neither one would shock me. I feel like he'll come back for one more year. I just think that you're this competitive, and I'll tell you what, if he wins a championship, he's ditching it like third period French. But if he comes up just short, I feel like he'd kind of do the Brett Favre thing and be like, I came this close to getting it. Let me go try to get it one more time. We remember that year in Minnesota in 2009. Brett Favre came so close to getting to the Super Bowl and maybe winning it. He came back in 2010, and obviously that was too much, but the idea was to come back and get what he came so close to getting. So everyone's trying to do the Peyton Manning. Everybody's trying to ride off and into the sunset. Or you can be John Elway, and that's let me win. Hold your one, I got two. So I think he'll be back, just purely guessing on my part. All right, let's break down some other news. Eric Almirola looking likely to retire, according to Bianchi's reporting. Not guaranteed, but everyone gets the sense that this is probably it for him. Matt, do you agree with that? And if so, who's your favorite to take over the 10 car?
I think he is done. He is ready to hang it up. He's just trying to, I guess, dot the I's and cross the T's with where he needs to. But from things that I have heard, your 10 car replacement is going to be Michael McDowell. And that's who I'm going to bet on to take the place of him.
Colin, what say you? Eric Almirola, is he coming back? Is he not coming back? Will he? Won't he? And if he won't, who will? I think you can read into all that.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming back either. And an interesting question for the 10-car team is that the Smithfield sponsorship that Eric Almirola has is tied to Eric Almirola. That's not really a team deal. That's more of a him deal. And with Michael McDowell, that Loves deal isn't his deal. That's furniture. That's Front Row Motorsports' sponsorship. So whoever fills that 10-car spot is going to have to bring money with them. Can Michael McDowell bring the money? I don't know. Can Chandler Smith do it? Maybe. Can Carson Hocevar do it? Well, he does have a relationship with one of Ross Chastain's sponsors, Worldwide Shipping Express. So he does have money that he can bring with him. And my guess is Carson Hocevar gets put in the 10-car for next year.
Crazy thought, boy.
You have what money to race. You got, because I mean, hell, Joey Logano had to pay for his truck ride.
Crazy thought, boys. Yeah. Crazy thought. What about SVG?
SVG is going to be a Chevrolet product. I think Chevrolet is going to put their money behind him, and they're going to bring him up because announced not very long ago, he's going to be making an Oval Series start at Indianapolis next week in a Nice truck. So, and I've kind of already been jostling around with a certain truck series driver I'm very close with. Told him, I said, man, don't let him beat you. I said, don't let him come out and beat you right off the bat.
Boy, if he wins on an oval next week, boy, we'll be really – I mean, SVG Mania will be running wild. So we'll see what happens. Will burn down. We'll see what happens with that. I, too, think that Eric Almirola is going to call it a day. Remember, he called it a day or was going to and then was quickly talked back in. And if I had to guess based on results, at least on that format, he probably regrets it because – you can make an argument that he's going through the worst cup season of his career. And that's got to be tough. Eric's a likable guy, but I think he's at the end of the line. I think he wants to go focus on the family. Not saying we never see him in NASCAR ever again here or there, but I feel like his time as a full-time guy is done. And, yeah, everything you read, the scuttlebutt, as they say, the gossip, it seems to be that Michael McDowell could head there. Now, what happens? I think they'd work out a deal with Love somehow or another. That's been a committed relationship. Yeah, I know it's a Front Row deal, but I mean, when you think Loves, you don't think Front Row. You know, you think of Michael McDowell. So I think they find a way to work it out. We'll see what happens, but my guess is Eric Almirola is gone. So speaking of SVG, let's talk about it. It seems to be a foregone conclusion at this point, as my dog types a letter, that he's coming to Cup next season, or at least NASCAR. Where do you think the best fit is for him, Colin? What say you?
Who, SVG?
Yes, sir.
I mean, Trackhouse would be a good spot for him because I do think that SVG does bring funding to that Trackhouse team. He is a Red Bull-sponsored driver, so he may see the return of a Red Bull-sponsored car in the NASCAR Cup Series, which would be kind of cool to me. But in my heart, I feel like Trackhouse isn't going to spend the $30 million it will take to acquire a charter from somebody. So who does own a charter right now? Excuse me. That's Spire Motorsports in that 77 car. I do think that SVG takes the Spire ride because there are already talks of Andretti buying Spire Motorsports right now, and Spire Motorsports getting a ton more funding. If that does happen, that car certainly becomes white hot to get it. It has the funding. It would have the engineers behind it. It would have just the power of Andretti behind you. And certainly Andretti loves winners. I mean, we see that in the IndyCar series right now. So that would be my wishful thinking of where SVG goes. So I'm going to say the 77 Spire car.
I disagree with you, but I'll tell you why momentarily. Matt, what say you? Where's the best fit for SVG? What do you think happens? Does he come to the Cup Series? Does he start out in the trucks? Does he start out at Xfinity? Does he go full-time Cup racing? Break it down for us.
First point, touching on that charter situation, where would the charter come from if Trackhouse pulls him up straight to Cup? What about the 78 lift fast car? What about one of the wear charters? Those are two that are on the lower end of that totem pole of having to perform, or you got to lose, you're losing your charter. It's up for sale. All right. I think it's going to end up being a scenario to where it's Nice Motorsports and Trackhouse form an alliance to where he runs a full truck season to get the approval to run super speedways in the bigger tracks. Just because he won on a street course, it doesn't automatically give him the approval to run a super speedway. He'll have to run the lower series to get super speedway and big track approval. So I think you're going to see a progressive step up. He'll start in trucks running with Nice. And I think this Indianapolis is the teaser that you're seeing coming up. He'll probably have funding from Worldwide Express because Trackhouse, they're not hurting for money. They are not hurting. That's one race team and one organization. I can tell you right now, next to Hendrick Motorsports, that is not hurting for money. All right. Worldwide Express, it will allow them to stay underneath the Trackhouse banner with Busch Light coming on, taking over a majority of Chastain's schedule for next year to where Worldwide Express had it this year. So it'll be probably a deal between Worldwide Express and Embrace Health. You'll probably see Embrace Health on the Cup car, Worldwide Express on the truck. It's going to be a combined effort because Chevrolet will push to keep him. I think it'll be the truck series to start, and then it'll be progressively go up. He'll probably be in Cup by 25.
All right, so you're thinking full-time Cup by 25. Look, I think he also does stay in Trackhouse. I don't think you put that kind of effort and money into him to not kind of, you know, you've birthed the baby. You might as well raise the child now. Now, how does that happen? The charter situation is complicated. But I agree, and I don't know what Matt knows, but I look at it, people kind of forget, yeah, Justin Marks runs that team as far as day-to-day operations. Pitbull is also a co-owner who I know could get some serious cheddar if he so desired to help out with that project. We kind of forget because Pitbull has been away from the track for the last few years after COVID and all that. I believe he says he's going to get back involved more and more as time goes on. So they can probably get a hold of the money that it would take if they are so desiring. I think Matt is right in the sense of if they should kind of baby SVG on up because it's a whole new world as far as ovals go. So I do. I think this teases it, and he stays in the Chevy camp. You know, it's interesting, right? Because SVG is the next big thing right now. And so you wonder – if Trackhouse let him go, you know, who would sign him? I think people would be falling over themselves to sign him because you got several road courses on this schedule these days, and he's not a guarantee by any means, but it feels like he's a good option to win one. We'll see what happens. Of course, he is going to make his trucks and oval debut at IRP for Nice Motorsports. Colin, what's your expectations for him in that truck next week? Any expectations at all? Obviously, he started out in Chicago, the street course. He wins at Mamma Jamma. What's your expectations now? He's going to be on an oval.
Well, talent-wise, SVG is going to be by far the most talented driver in that field. But he's going to learn how aggressive the truck series really is, especially on our truck tracks. We've seen run-ins with Haley Deegan and Dean Thompson, and you know, they've kind of alluded to the fact that these truck drivers don't cut anyone slack. It's like watching Paul Tracy in the SRX series. It is just tough racing from start to finish, and he's going to learn real quick how physical NASCAR is going to be. I expect good results if he keeps his car clean and everything goes right. I'd say a win for him on his first oval start, I would say, is a top 10 finish, which I do believe he could get. So for me, the ceiling is top 10, and the floor for me is a finish outside the top 20. Just based on the talent of who he is as a driver, if he can't make a top 20 finish, then it would be a very disappointing night for him.
Matt, what say you? What's your expectations for SVG in the truck series next week?
I would say I would go a little bit different than Colin. The ceiling will probably be top 15. If he can get out of IRP with a top 15, I'd say it'd be a successful debut. His floor, probably around 20th to 25th, considering the equipment he's going to be in, and we know how good that equipment can be on any given weekend. So I would say 20th to 25th, the floor, ceiling, top 15. He could flirt with a top 10, but I'd say top 15 is more realistic.
All right. Well, there is one more. Well, there were several notable pieces in that Bianchi piece to get to, but one we have to touch on, especially because I host this damn show, don't I? A little team called Legacy Motor Club, near and dear to my heart, as everybody knows. If you know me, you know that's I bleed what was once Petty Blue and now Black and Gold. So let's talk about it. The rumor, the scuttlebutt, the innuendo is suddenly that John Hunter could replace Noah Gregson in the 42 car next year. This kind of ties back into the Martin Truex conversation, because if Martin Truex retires, John Hunter seems to have the inside lane to what may or may not be the 19 car, but that ride anyway. So I want your thoughts. I'll start here because near and dear. I think it would be a mistake for Legacy Motor Club to get rid of Noah Gregson this soon, because you can't build anything if you keep putting new people in the 42 each year. I understand why they kind of cut Ty Dillon loose. He's had a lot of opportunities, and it didn't go great. Noah Gregson is a young, fresh-faced, green rookie, and it's been a titanic struggle. There's no doubt about that. I'm not sugarcoating that at all. It's been a struggle of a season. But when you look at Noah Gregson's potential, he's got a ton of it, and his personality is great with sponsors. You know, I don't mean to disrespect John Hunter, but he does not have Noah Gregson's big personality. I don't think he'd go all out for the Wendy's promotion that Noah Gregson has, in terms of, you know, he had the big Baconator outfit for Chicago, and he's had the huge Wendy's hats, and he was handing out Frosty coupons at the Daytona media room before the 500. The personality is there. I think he deserves one more shot. This organization has undergone so much change since Maury Gallagher bought the majority of it. I'm starting to realize that Maury Gallagher, while I think is driven to compete, and I love that, he's a little impatient. We got to give it a little bit of time. And as the creator of this show says, time takes time. And so I think Gregson deserves one more year with Toyota backing, because they're getting the bare minimum to none from Chevy. And frankly, they're going to give the best assets to the 43 anyway. And it's not to say I'm not knocking John Hunter. I like John Hunter. I've always been a Joe Nemechek fan, so it's kind of baked in for me to like John Hunter. But I think Gregson deserves one year with Toyota backing, and if it doesn't greatly improve, then go ahead and give him the boot. What say you, Colin? Does this happen? Is Noah Gregson really going to get the boot after his first season? Do you think Toyota's driving this? Is this a Gallagher call? Is this a Jimmy call? Is this a Cal Wells call? Did he puke in Richard Petty's hat? What say you?
I mean, it's not unprecedented for drivers to get just one and done campaigns, but just looking at the numbers, Noah Gregson has made 14 starts in the Cup Series, and he has an average finish of 29.9. Ty Dillon, in far worse equipment, is averaging 26.7, so three places higher than Noah Gregson. And I would say Legacy Motor Club has way better equipment than the Spire that 77 car is right now. Compared to the other top rookie in the Cup Series, Ty Gibbs, who has 19.3. Now, is that a fair assessment? Maybe, yeah. I would say so. They're both rookies in the NASCAR Cup Series. The next-gen car makes everything sort of equal in terms of competition. It has highlight on the driver. These two guys were the top two guys in the Xfinity Series last year. It was Noah Gregson, Ty Gibbs. It was sort of that battle all year. And Noah Gregson has done nothing to impress me so far in 2023. If somehow, and it wouldn't surprise me, if Legacy Motor Club pulls a AlphaTauri where they would just get rid of Nick, they just got rid of Nick DeVries in 12 races in the F1 series. I it wouldn't surprise me if they just got rid of Noah Gregson, you know, right before the playoffs, if things keep going this badly, just to see how good that car possibly is. But it's a damn shame, because I like Noah Gregson. I've met him a couple times. He was here at the Snowball Derby when he won in 2018. Had a fantastic time with him. Saw him, you know, eventually go from KBM to the JR Motorsports and now in the Cup Series. He has a lot of talent, but he just hasn't really shown that in the NASCAR Cup Series this year. So I think he's one and done. And if you put John Hunter Nemechek in that car, I think he would produce way better results than Noah Gregson at this point.
Quick rebuttal to that. Here's my issue. I think when it comes – look, I'm not saying that John Hunter couldn't do better, wouldn't do better, any of that. But the point being, if Legacy wants to pull a, you know, we're talking about how Front Row wants to build up and become a B-tier organization, right? We've talked about that a lot on the show in recent weeks. We've talked about that. If Legacy wants to become a true B-tier organization, you have to build. And the reality is this. John Hunter seems to have the inside track on the 19th. That seems to be, who knows? That just seems to be it. So if that is true, then let's say MTJ comes back for one more year or even two more years or whatever. Then you just have to up and get rid of John Hunter in the 42 in a year or so. Look, I understand familiarity breeds contempt, but consistency also breeds some results. You got to give it a little, because Ty Dillon out after 1 year. Fine, Ty Dillon's had a lot of opportunities. Noah Gregson, this is, you know, he's going to spend 3/4 of his rookie season without arguably any Chevy backing. And if it is any Chevy backing, it's the bare minimum since the announcement they're going to Toyota. Matt, I'll come to you. Do you think this is happening? Is Toyota pushing this? What's going on? Talk to me as a Legacy Motor Club guy. Am I got a route for someone else in the 42 next year? What's going on?
This has got the makings. Well, not the makings. The writing is clearly on this. This is, if this happens, this is a Toyota deal. It's not Legacy Motor Club. I would seriously doubt there's Jimmy Johnson. I would seriously doubt there's Maury Gallagher. Because if Maury Gallagher was impatient, why does he have Daniel Dye in the 43 truck? Why does he have Rajah Caruthan? I know why he's got Rajah Caruthan in the 24 truck, because Chevrolet is fully backing Rajah Caruthan. I know that for a fact, all right? But to back up and touch on something Colin said, is John Hunter truly the better – from a overall standpoint of statistics, from each series, taking away Cup, is John Hunter more superior than Noah? I'm going to say they're dead even. Because if you put John Hunter in the same exact car as it sits right now, all you do is swap the seat insert out, and you put John Hunter's seat insert in that 42 car right now in a Chevrolet, could not just either one of y'all, could anybody realistically say that John Hunter is going to outperform Noah in the same identical car? I'm going to say no, because Logan hit the nail on the head. Ever since they announced they're going to Toyota, Chevrolet probably said, you're not getting nothing. You're getting nothing from us. Maybe this much. Because has the 43 set the world on fire this year? No. Look at last year versus this year. He wins the Southern 500. Was it great to see that 43 car in victory lane? Absolutely it was. At the Southern 500, made it even better. But I don't think you can truly say that John Hunter is far more superior to Noah, even Ty Dillon. Because look, Ty Dillon set out for over a year, and you jump right back into a brand new car that you've never seen before. Now, if they had to run the Gen 6 car, give him one more year to kind of knock the rust off, maybe it's a different story. But this has got the – if it does happen, which I don't think it's going to happen, but if it does, this is Toyota wrought all over it right here. Because some things I was privy to overhearing on my trip that I was on, Toyota's got their hands a little bit too deep into places that it don't need to be, not only across Cup, but through Xfinity and trucks.
There you go. Yeah, Toyota takes their racing department very seriously. I do know that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Let's see what happens. I don't know. Colin, do you have any rebuttal to that or any thoughts on that piece of information before we move it along?
I mean, I can see the point about Chevy pulling funding, but we are talking about everyone still has the same level of equipment in the Cup Series, and I really do still believe it's solely up to the driver and the crew chief. And if we're talking about underperforming teams, let's talk about Carson Hocevar when he went to Gateway. He was running phenomenal in that number 7 car. He was running inside the top 15 before he had issues. He possibly had a top 10 car at Gateway based on how everything was going at the time. So if Carson Hocevar can just go right from the Truck Series to a potential almost top 15 finish at Gateway, there's certainly more speed in that 7 car than Corey LaJoie is getting out of it. I'm sorry, I love Corey LaJoie, but
there's a lot more speed in that car that he's not getting at. And I think if we put Carson Hocevar on that 42 car, we may see more speed in that 42 car. Who knows? It honestly depends on who's a more aggressive driver. And Noah Gregson, to me, I kind of doesn't have any more excuses. He does have Cup Series starts in the next gen car in last year, even though they were at Super Speedways.
But you're still in an era where they get no track time. We spend an hour every Saturday or whatever, and 20 minutes out is some group practice and then some qualifying. I'm not saying you're wrong.
You can't miss it that bad for 20 weeks.
All kidding aside, yes, he is dead last in the full-time standings. Let's not forget he missed a race, though. I'm not sitting here defending and saying it's been a good season. It hasn't. But I see little incremental signs of progress. He's not wrecking as much in the second half. Look, I think – and let's not forget, he did just qualify 12th, started out well. Obviously, they fell back like a rock, no doubt about that. I just think 1 year, especially when we live in a world where Harrison Burton looks likely to get a third year in the Wood Brothers, I just think that's given up too soon. You might be entirely right. I should be on the John Hunter train. But I just think it's too soon to say, because let's be honest, in that camp, the 43 is going to get the best equipment. 43 is going to get – that's their lead guy. That's their lead car. That's their brand. That's their baby. That's still got the Petty font. So is the 42. But you get my point. That's the one that everyone's going to associate with the team. Matt, if you'd like to chime in before we move on.
Here's a saying that I learned early on in my driving career when I started driving dirt and I progressed up through the ranks. Equipment will expose really quick. And I mean really quick, how good a driver is or how bad a driver is. The equipment will tell you real quick. And unfortunately, I feel like this is a scenario that Noah Gregson's maybe dealing with, because of they're going to flip from Chevrolet to Toyota. Now Chevrolet says, not so quick. You're going to get the bare minimum. So I think this is one of those scenarios. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But who knows?
We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. My gut says this won't happen, but if Toyota's driving it, then it just might, because there's a lot of cooks in that Legacy Motor Club kitchen. There is a lot of cooks in the kitchen. So I don't know how it's going to turn out. I'm 50-50 on if it'll happen. We'll see what happens. All right. Finally, we got to talk a little Formula One. They're at the halfway break. A little who's hot, who's not, Colin. I want your take. Give me halfway for Formula One. I know who's hot. I know who's hot, but you go ahead and give me some honorable mentions, because one guy's hot and one team's hot.
Well, I mean, this is best team, best driver, obviously Red Bull and Max Verstappen. Let's just not get on this, but let's talk about disappointments. The biggest disappointment so far in this 2023 Formula One campaign has been Nyck de Vries. He doesn't even race in Formula One anymore. He was replaced by Daniel Ricciardo after 10 races. You know, Ricardo has been back in the seat for two races. You know, he's driven well. He's driven way better than De Vries has so far. We kind of knew this was coming. And Helmut Marko, the Red Bull overlords over there, you know, they're talking about replacing Sergio Perez after 2023, because he has not gotten out of Q3 at six times this year. He's not even gotten into Q3, which is a complete disappointment if you're a Red Bull fan. The most improved team this year I have is Aston Martin. Fernando Alonso switched from Alpine. He came to Aston Martin. He finished seventh in the constructor standings last year with Aston Martin. Now they're in through the first six races. They were on five podiums. To be honest, Aston Martin, if we're talking about the top tier teams in the midfield, they're right at the top of the midfield to get a third place in the constructor standings. In my opinion, going forward in 2023, the biggest surprise has been McLaren. Over the past couple of weeks, they've stepped up their dominance all the way through July. This car has kind of had issues in the beginning of the season. Now with two second place finishes in a row at Silverstone in Hungary, Oscar Piastri had a finish second in the GP, the sprint race at the Belgian Grand Prix on Saturday. I think McLaren is trending upwards to contend with Aston Martin for third place in the constructors standings. But we'll wrap it up with the biggest sort of underachiever is the Red Arrows at Ferrari. they had a dominating start to 2022 last year, and in the past 18 months, that's all gone away. They have not won a race so far this year. The last time they did was in Austria in July of last year. That's been a year now since the Ferrari team has even come close to sniffing. They've only had one podium finish so far in 2023, and that was at the beginning of the season. You know, there was a lot of changes that the Ferrari team made by getting a new race strategist, new engineer, pretty much in the entire staff that runs Ferrari has been new except the drivers, and it just has not panned out, which is sort of becoming a joke at this point. This has been ongoing for years and years and years, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better. Formula One is off until the end of August. The next race is in Max Verstappen's home country, the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort, which is actually a very fun track. So there's no Formula One for me to talk about. So if you don't like Formula One on Racing Refresh Happy Hour, congratulations for the next couple of weeks. We won't talk about it.
Well, luckily we get to decide what content we produce. Now, before we talk to Matt about his Mid-Ohio experience, we do got to touch on the Hall of Fame. The 2024 NASCAR Hall of Fame class was made official today. Let's go ahead and Peggy, show me the first three. Show me the quote unquote big three getting in. Of course, that's Jimmy Johnson, Chad Knaus, Donnie Allison of the Pioneer ballot. Of course, Janet Guthrie going to go in as the 2024 Landmark Award winner. All right. The big news kind of coming out of this is not that anything surprising. It's great that Janet Guthrie's getting her moment and Donnie Allison. Jimmy Johnson was not unanimous. Matt, I got to get your thoughts on this one.
Whoever voted against him needs to have their hard card revoked. They need to have their media hard card revoked, because how can somebody that's as high as he is on the all-time wins list, the championships he has, and what he accomplished, how is he not unanimous? How? You can't give me one legitimate excuse or reasoning why he's not unanimous. That's about the only way I can say it.
Yeah, I don't get it. Colin, I think that pretty much sums it up. You got anything to add?
I thought baseball writers were bad. Baseball writers, they don't ever agree on who should get into
all. King Griffey Jr. wasn't unanimous, and neither was Jeter.
Yeah. And the thing about for Jimmy Johnson, he went in with Chad Knaus, which I think is great. It's great for those two to go in together to the Hall of Fame. For Donnie Allison, it's been a long time coming for him to get into the Hall of Fame. I think it's kind of dumb that we only have one guy from the past and two from the future. I think we should have two of both. But honestly, for me, I think the highlight of this is Janet Guthrie finally gets some recognition that she deserves as probably being the pioneer of females in the world of NASCAR. So hats off to her. I heard they were making a movie about her. Don't know what happened to that. I know Hilary Swank was supposed to be the lead, the star of the movie, and that was 2 years ago that they announced that. But if anyone deserves a Christopher Nolan biopic, it should be her. I mean, this is a woman who endured so much and paved the way for, you know, the Danica Patricks of the world, the Haley Deegans, and I'm going to say the Johanna Longs of the world, because Johanna Long was probably the most talented female race car driver we've seen in a very long time come to NASCAR who didn't make it because of funding. So for me, they kind of hit it out of the park with this Hall of Fame announcement.
They should do like when the final coaches poll comes out in college football, they make all the coaches release their top 25.
Yeah, I want to see them do that.
Yeah, I don't quite get it, but you do you. I'd like some of what you're smoking. All right, I know we're running a little long, but I think it's because good content is getting made, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of good content, let's talk to Matt. Matt, you spotted in Mid-Ohio.
Yeah.
Producer Peggy, you got something to say?
I have a comment about Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah?
Well, I think while he is very deserving, then it's too soon for him to go in while he's still running.
I agree. I do think that they put these guys in too soon. I agree with that. I felt that way about Dale Jr. I feel the way about not so much Matt Kenseth, because he seems to be firmly retired, but I do feel like it's a little bit too much marketing based. I've said that. I know I've had some unpopular moments on this show with Colin because of it. But
the only reason Carl Edwards didn't get in this year is because it was too soon for the world to know why he really left. Because, you know, at the Hall of Fame, he would have been asked that multiple times, and eventually he would crack under the pressure, and we would all know. And I'm pretty sure he was just not happy in NASCAR anymore.
It's because he knew about the aliens long before the government. It's a thing. He knew. They taught him how to backflip up there, and so it's a whole thing. Anywho, I agree with you, Peggy. I do. I think they go in a little too soon, and he should not go in as even a part-time driver that he currently is for Legacy Motor Club. But we don't get to make the decisions. We just sit on a couch and criticize him. I'll tell you who doesn't sit on his couch too often. That's Matt Nicholson. Matt, you spotted Mid Ohio for Brett Holmes. Talk about that experience. You know, what's that like? I know it was soggy. It was wet. I called it an open face sandwich earlier. What's it like to be spotting on a road course of that size and spotting, period?
Like I sum it up to everybody, that was the darndest, craziest, wildest, but yet most fun thing I've ever done at a racetrack, even counting being behind the wheel of a dirt late model. It was an experience that I didn't expect to be as good as it was. Now, granted, I was, as they say the term, baptism by fire. I was put in this scenario where it was a baptism by a blowtorch. Because it was on Friday, we decided which zones we were going to cover because we ended up going with four spotters for the 32 truck. It was myself, Brett's dad, Stacy. He was on the main spotter stand. Sam Mabry, which is Brett's hauler driver, he went to the keyhole and spotted the southern end of the racetrack. Well, I took the northern end. And then mainly in the carousel in 12 and 13 and down the front stretch, Jerry Baxter, Brett's crew chief, had that section. And but yet I didn't realize until they told me they had to give me the zone from the exit of turn six up the hill to seven through the S's into eight, over into nine, into the entry of turn 10, that I would have to call where the one to go line and the choose zone is. Okay. Which lane you gonna want? Because I don't think the choose zone is gonna make a difference if you take it inside or the outside or the right or the left. So we sat for 45 minutes probably before the race started. We're just getting details of what Brett wanted here, what Brett wanted there, how he wanted this to be called, how he wanted that to be called. So luckily I had a very, very, very keen veteran. Jerry Baxter would give me the number, which he was on one end of the racetrack and I was on the other end, which I had to walk from where the lift gate of the hauler sat on the ground to my point was 3/4 of a mile one way on foot. So, yeah, I was a little wore out and soaking wet after the rainstorm came and we had to be in a lightning delay. But I thought spotting in the dry would be wild. Spotting in the rain is nuts. I ended up being on the back. I ended up finding myself on the back of a pickup truck with none other than Tracy Hines, spotting for ThorSport, spotting for Connor Jones driving the 66. Mm-hmm. I was back there with him on the truck. Next to us was David Pepper, Kevin Striegel, Jeff Striegel's son was spotting for Daniel Dye. Rich Luscious's brother, John. I think his name's John if I remember right. He was spotting for Haley Deegan on that end. And there was probably 20 of us back there in the same zone. Spotting in the rain is absolutely nuts because that was painstaking having to watch a race be at that slow of a pace for two stages. It was painstaking. But when it dried up and then NASCAR wants to go changing the rules on us and the drop of a finger, because they told us at the start of the race, all right, we're going to be in single file. Single file starts. I'm thinking, okay, all right. And then Jerry calls to me on the radio. Brett calls me on the radio. Hey, did you confirm that? I said, yep, I got it. Single file restarts. Then stage three goes up when the track goes from wet to dry. I heard them when they said, all right, track's now considered dry. All right, we're going double fall. Great. Start giving me some numbers. But it was an unforgettable experience in a positive way, and very, very hopeful to get to do it again. Maybe one more time this year on an oval. Not sure yet. Just working the logistics of it out. But in 2024, I'm pretty sure I will be going to all the road courses that the Truck Series runs, whether it's two or even three.
Well, we'll have to get you back on here and see how you get used to it. One question, though. What would you say your biggest challenge was? Was it NASCAR switching the rules on the fly or something else?
It really wasn't that, Logan. The biggest challenge was coming up through arguably the most technical part of the racetrack in mid-Ohio. It was what you would say, keeping your head on a swivel, making sure you pick up the truck when it comes out of turn five into turn six, but yet whoever's in front of him or behind him, keeping your eye on them at the same time. Oh, and yet doing it in the rain as well. Combined with having to keep your equipment, your radios dry where they don't get soaking wet, because I'm thinking, I'm at the farthest port away from the trailer. I don't have a backup radio. If this radio goes out, I'm screwed. But, yeah, that was the most challenging part, is just keeping your head on a swivel at all times, making sure you clear him at the right spot, you have a good line of sight everywhere he comes through at, and then just making sure he stays out of trouble, even though he did have one incident that was in front of me that I had to try to call him out of, but Lawless Allen just squoze him off the racetrack, and he had really nowhere to go. But It was overall a great experience, and I had an absolute ball. And it really solidified itself to me when I got back to the hauler. Jerry Baxter looked at me square in the eyes and says, "You did a fantastic job being your first time ever doing this." And for it to come from somebody like that, I was like, "Wow, that means a lot. Thank you. I appreciate that." And there you are.
Yeah, Jerry Baxter, longtime veteran. Of course, one time he was crew chief of the 43. But great to hear about your experience, Matt. We hope you'll come on and tell us some more, especially next year if you end up doing two or three. And just sounds like a boatload of fun. And the way you give us kind of the inside take on it all is something we can't overstate how cool it is for us to hear about. But we are running on time, so it's time for our weekend preview. Weekend preview. Thank God there ain't much to preview, because we have gone over. We have filled the cup up. But that's all right. So, Colin, IndyCars at the Nashville Grand Prix. Any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, so we're now in the last five races of the IndyCar season. Alex Palou has an 80-point lead over Joseph Newgarden heading into that. We are approaching the Nashville Grand Prix, then we have the Indianapolis doubleheader, then we have the last oval race of the season, then we go out west for the final two races of the season. Shaping up to be a very exciting championship finale. Nashville is a race where anything can happen. We've seen Marcus Ericsson fly through the air and still went on to win the race in the first ever Nashville Grand Prix. I expect Joseph Newgarden to win this race. I expect him to cut into Alex Palou's point lead as we get closer and closer to whoever will hold the Astor Cup. And heck, maybe this may be a preview of next year's championship race, as IndyCar is discussing some scheduling options for 2024, removing the doubleheader from NASCAR, which I'm not really ashamed to see that, going back to Milwaukee and then moving the championship race from Laguna Seca to the Nashville Grand Prix. So that should be a very interesting thing that we can talk about in the future. When IndyCar does decide to release their schedule for next year. So a lot of IndyCar news, but Joseph Newgarden gets the win at Nashville.
We shall see. And of course we got Michigan, we got Cup, we got Xfinity. Matt, we play a little game when we made picks, and you'll see it here in a moment, but I want your straight up picks for Xfinity and Cup. Who you got this weekend?
Cup, I'm going to say Ford continues their streak at Michigan. And it's going to be that six car breaking through, and Keselowski gets his home track win that he's been basically searching for in Cup for so long.
Going to get that hometown feeling.
Xfinity, with it being a super speedway style setup, how can you bet against Austin Hill?
That's a fair point. Austin Hill is like the Xfinity Series Dale Jr. or Dale Sr. with the way he's running the super speedways. All right. So, Colin, you got an Xfinity pick for me?
You're telling me I got to pick a winner for the Cabo Wabo 250? Is that what you're saying?
Cabo Wabo, baby.
I got to pick something for the Cabo Wabo 250. You know, in the Xfinity Series, you know, you have a little bit more power at Michigan than you do the Cup Series race. So it's kind of like a sort of a quasi intermediate slash super speedway race. I am probably going to go on a little bit of a long shot here, but I think he can do it. I'm going to go Parker Kligerman gets the win this week at Michigan. He's been hot.
All right. You're right. He came oh so close last week. And now, Matt, you'll see the game that we play when we make picks. We do it a little door bump or clear style. It's time for Racing Refresh Picks. All right, Peggy, come on in. Come on in. Come on in. Put that scoreboard up, please.
Oh, I'm sucking, aren't I? I'm sucking.
You guess who? Wouldn't you know who won the pony? I said Chris Buescher. The way it works, Matt, if you listen to our Bubble Clear, you know, we take one pick a week. We can't take anyone else's pick. And if we take them, that's it for the year. We get one charter a week, and that's it. So I took Chris Buescher because I'm a dadgum genius sometimes. Smartest man sitting in this chair, Matt. Smartest man sitting in this particular chair. So I won. Can you put that scoreboard up one more time just so I can see it? It looks so good. Oh, yeah. There. Colin and Adam, boy, you guys are getting power coupled. You guys are getting power coupled by me and Pegleg here. Peter, please tell us the picking order for the week. I know I go last, but beyond that, please.
So Adam will go first, then Colin, then me, then Logan. Adam did not answer when we asked for a pick. So I am going to give him BJ McLeod.
That's right. Get loud from McLeod, baby. Let's get loud from McLeod. Check your phone in Italy, bud. Get loud for McLeod. Who's next?
Colin.
I don't even know why I pick, because every time I pick a guy, he does good and then he screws up. I picked Ryan Blaney last week because I thought he had momentum. I picked Kyle Larson at Pocono, and you know, Danny Hamlin did nothing wrong. It was just hard racing, and you know, that's sort of how things go. I'm gonna go MTJ. Gets the win.
All right. Martin Truex Jr.
No.
What?
When I was reviewing, because I had to write the script this week.
What?
You picked MTJ last week.
So I have not picked Ryan Blaney?
No.
Damn, this is hard.
You just got
Ryan Blaney has won at Michigan before, but I don't think he's going to have the speed this week. And, you know, I could pick somebody to win. And I know he had a good week last week. He finished inside the top 10, making this the only other team to get both their cars inside the top 10 at Richmond. I'm going to take the 3-car, Boston Dillon.
All right. I think that's not a bad pick. Is it your turn, Peggy?
It is, because you won.
Thank you for reminding me, by God. Oh, forget that multimillionaire lottery. I won Racing Refresh Picks.
I'm going to take Ty Gibbs.
Hey, he's running good. Let's not sleep on Ty. He gets us top 10s. So, anywho, see what I did there? God, that was good, people. That was good. All right. Michigan, you know, if I hadn't already used Kyle Larson, I'd go with him. 2-mile Kyle is a real thing. So, I'm going to go with the other Kyle. I'm going to go RCR style. Let's go Kyle Busch.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how we view it. And since we've done Racing Refresh picks, and I like Adam's pick of BJ McLeod, that really is going to be a competitive one. Hey, to his credit, though, qualified 21st last week. Let's give them a little flowers. All right. So with that, it's time for closing time. That's right, folks. Every great episode of Racing Refresh Happy Hour comes to an end eventually. And even if this one wasn't great, though, I think it was because of our special guest. The only way we can get better is keep on going. So, Matt Nicholson, you're our guest, so you get your first chance at final words. This is where you can plug, say anything you want. I mean, if you want to take your shirt off, we don't care. Closing time is closing time.
Yeah, I think I'll leave the shirt on. I'll spare you all the agony.
Got to have confidence, brother. It's all right.
I think RFK goes the back-to-back. They keep asserting themselves as the higher pecking order Ford team, I guess you could say. Xfinity, like I said, how can you go against Austin Hill? And then I'm just really anxious to see what SVG does in a truck next week at IRP. Really anxious.
I agree. It's going to be a storyline to follow. Peggy, final words.
Well, as my laptop is about to die with 6% to go, I hope that Ryan Blaney wins, and when he doesn't win, I'll cry, and that's it.
Well, let's not cry about it now. That's a lot of tears. You just came off a big losing streak before the Coke 600. We don't want you to. If you cry that long, we'll be building up an arc and lining them up 2x2. That's not really how that goes. Colin, final words.
So we don't really talk about this a lot on Racing Refresh, but we do have to mention that Formula E does exist, and it does offer good racing from time to time. They just ended their 2022-2023 season over the weekend, and Envision Racing, which has been around since the start of Formula E, finally won a championship. So congratulations to Envision Racing and Nick Cassidy for becoming the FIA Formula E World Championship for 2022-2023. It's not a big turnaround because they do have another season starting later this year. The schedule is yet to be announced, but they had a great turnout at Portland International Raceway. It was a full packed stands. They raced inside, indoors in England over the weekend. So congratulations to Envision Racing, and my final thought, support your local short track. They deserve it.
Amen to that. Without your local short track, there'd be no big tracks to go to and see the big stars. They all got started somewhere. My final words are, number one, Matt, I want to thank you for coming on the show and filling in for Adam and sharing your experience from Mid-Ohio. It's been great to have you on. Will you come back, Mr. Nichols? Will you come back?
Oh, yeah.
All right, you'll come back. He even promises that he's going to comment next week about SVG's debut in the trucks. There, I just conned into that, Matt. See how I did that? I could talk my way into and almost out of anything. I'm sure my lady disagrees. But thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. And thank you all for watching. Ryan, thank you for commenting. AJ, appreciate it. Colin, as always, great job. Peggy, thank you for all you do. Adam, hope you're enjoying Italy. And hell yeah, let's get loud from a cloud. We'll see you next week. Omaha, I'm gone.